Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Your generosity could lead to a fatality. That's what new signs in the city of Manchester say, urging residents not to give panhandlers money because that cash might be used for drugs, which could lead to overdose. But while Manchester's approach has created some controversy, Queen City leaders say they had to act to reduce overdoses and begging on the streets. And they're not the only ones feeling this way. Many New Hampshire cities recently have struggled to curb panhandling and other public behaviors they see as undesirable. They've passed various ordinances with mixed success, either ignored by the public or too difficult to enforce or struck down in court. Today in The Exchange, how do you think communities should address this? What ideas do you have? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests with us in studio. Robert Waters is here, outreach worker with Southwestern Community Services. He's a recovery coach. He works with homeless people in Claremont, Newport, and Keene. And Rob, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, John Burns, director of SOS Recovery in Stratford County. He is also founder of Families Hoping and Coping, a support group. He serves on the advisory board for the New Hampshire Harm Reduction Coalition. And John, good to have you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Persephone Lesperance, recovery coach with SOS and a recovery support worker. Persephone has her own personal story of recovery, and we'll hear that. Persephone, thank you so much for taking time out.
Thank you.
Also with us, Nick Willard, police chief for the city of Manchester. And Chief Willard, you're a busy guy. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So in a June letter, Chief Willard, you said the number one complaint you receive from the Manchester community is about panhandling and begging. What are you hearing from people about that?
Well, I think, you know, since we've had the drug crisis has pretty much exploded. I think we all know that. And that has also caused an increase in panhandling on a lot of our traffic islands, sidewalks, when people are dining downtown. A lot of people are coming up begging for money. So I was getting a lot of complaints from my city politicians as well as the city residents. And, you know, the flavor I was getting was, you know, do something, chief. Arrest these people. You can't allow this to happen in our city. And I don't think somebody who asks another person for money should be incarcerated on any level. I don't think we should be fining them, ticketing them, or anything of that nature. So I decided to kind of put it back on the community. This is a social issue. It's not a law enforcement issue. And yet, that's what people want it to be. So my approach essentially was, let's educate the community to, one, if we want it to stop, we have to stop giving. If you stop giving, then they won't continue to ask for money on the street corner. But while we do that, we also want to educate the panhandler as to where the services are. So as I looked at this social condition, and I understood the underlying factor was the drug crisis, for the most part. Not every person who asks others for money is suffering the disease of addiction. So I certainly don't want to stereotype all. But when I looked at the numbers and I had 26 known panhandlers in our city overdose, six of whom have died. You know, that to me, we need to take action.
So there was some connection there in the numbers.
That was the connectivity that, you know, we could possibly be saving a life if we can direct a panhandler to services as opposed to giving them $5 and that $5 leading ultimately to potentially to their death.
Well, and I want to get everybody's thoughts on this and the many other approaches that other cities have been taking toward these twin problems. But what's been the reaction so far, Chief Willard? This has been going on for, what, 2 months now, these signs?
Yeah, it's been going on for 2 months. I actually just started putting sandwich board signs on the sidewalks. I saw that happening in New York. Now, New York, has it's illegal to do it. Again, I don't think people should be incarcerated or even fined. Somebody's asking for money because they have a social condition. It could be mental illness, it could be addiction, or it could just be homelessness. And the response in most communities is to incarcerate. It makes no sense to me. It's a nonviolent crime. Somebody actually exercising their constitutional right to ask another person for money. The reaction I'm getting is the panhandlers have told me that it has made a difference on some levels. Others have told me it hasn't, because they actually will sit in the same place every day at the same time, and the same individuals will continue to give them money. So they have regular customers, they tell me. Some of them are very angry at me and have told me in profanity-laden diatribes about how upset they are and that I don't understand their condition. But mostly, I think it's working. People are telling me they're seeing less and less panhandling than they had previously.
The number for you to join us here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So we want to turn to everybody, but maybe you next, Bob, since you work with homeless people, as I said, in the western part of this state. What are you seeing and hearing from people in your communities, Keene, Claremont, Newport?
Well, a lot of the people that we have out here in my area of the woods is people that are in recovery, and a lot of people suffer from mental illness. I've gone on outreach efforts with, fire, emergency people, police departments, other outreach workers. And a lot of what we see in the tents sometimes is like medications that they actually need. And these folks that are experiencing homelessness, a lot of them are on a fixed income if they have an income at all. No place for campfires out there. It's illegal to be putting campfires up without permits. So they have to buy readily made food, which is inherently a much larger cost than buying a loaf of bread and some sandwich meat. So all their money goes to that, and they have no money to afford their medications. We did have, and to some degree still have, a little bit of a panhandling concern in the Keene area, but that has since dwindled down. In my experience with panhandling, I have, as someone out there, I've done both in my life. I've given money, I've given food, and I've given referrals.
So all three approaches.
All three, absolutely. I guess if I had to pick one, I would definitely encourage people to give those referrals to the local service agencies in the area that can help that person. I mean, the old adage of, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You teach someone to fish and they're fed for life. There's a lot of people in all of our communities statewide that can help with a myriad of different things. And I really strongly encourage referrals and maybe food, to those that are out there that are seeking some
instead
help.
Of money. I definitely want to ask you in a couple minutes, Rob, about a particular controversy in Keene, concerns about safety downtown and people passing out in public spaces. But I want to bring our other guests in as well. So, John, what do you think about this connection between these two issues that the chief is talking about, panhandling and substance abuse?
I think one of the dangers that you have and I think that using the language that he's using and not punishing people is certainly better than the path he's chosen as far as the signs. But I would disagree with it, because I think it paints a broad brush, and I think it creates a disconnection with individuals who need connection. And I think it's important to ask people what they need. And I don't think you can paint a broad brush and say that that most or all individuals struggling are out there panhandling because they're struggling with a substance use disorder, or because they're homeless, or because of mental health. I think there's some people that have mental health issues. I think there's some people out there that don't. I think there's some with substance use disorder and some that aren't. My experience is make eye contact with them and have a conversation with them. Personally, I tend not to give money to them. to individuals like that. But I think you have to have a conversation and get to know people. And I think the individuals that we're talking about are kind of the most marginalized in our society. They're the most fragile. And we need to have conversations with them because they're not all homeless. They're not all struggling with substance use disorder. And, you know, I almost equate the signs to putting up a sign at a zoo saying don't feed the animals.
Well, so appreciating the sentiment, trying to connect people with services, but concerned about the image that it gives that automatically this $5 that I give to this person is going to go to buy, you know, fentanyl.
Right, which just isn't true. So I think it varies from one individual to the next. And I think having that conversation, because my experience has been more often not, they'll say they want food and I'll go buy them some food and sit down and have a conversation with them. And that's pretty effective because you start to uncover some other needs that they have.
Well, our senior producer, Ellen Grimm, recently spoke with a homeless person about the signs in Manchester. She talked to 37-year-old Richard Lewis, who said he'd been asking for money on the streets for about 2 years. And Richard said he thinks that the new Manchester signs urging people not to give will make things tougher for him and others. Let's hear.
These people are out here panhandling because they have no job. They have nobody to take care of them and fend for them. So they're left to do it themselves. So they're out here panhandling. And now you're going to take away their only ability to make money and fend for themselves? Because why? You know, not all of us homeless people are drug addicts. Not all of us homeless people are scumbags. Not all homeless people are, I mean, look at me. I got no problem with drugs, alcohol. I'm homeless.
Again, that's 37-year-old Richard Lewis, who's been living on the streets and panhandling for about 2 years. He spoke with our senior producer, Ellen Grimm. So, Persephone, I'd love your thoughts, too. Again, especially given your work with substance abuse recovery. What do you think about this connection that people are making between homelessness and substance abuse?
I mean, I'd have to, just to start off, like, I agree that not every homeless person or somebody who's experiencing homelessness is an addict, and not every addict is homeless. I experienced a long 5 years as somebody experiencing substance use disorder, and I never experienced homelessness. But when I see this, I see that, you know, you have the Manchester police who are just, you know, the public looks at them and are like, what are you doing? And they can only do so much. It's as if they forget that people, they go out every single day and they're saving people's lives. We forget about that sometimes. And so easily, like, hate breeds hate. So for me, I see this could be seen in a positive light. They're encouraging connection. They're encouraging those conversations, I believe, are not being had on those street corners at a stoplight. I believe those conversations are being had when you're volunteering at the soup kitchen or at the recovery centers or so on and so forth. I believe that's where, like, the effort could be put in. I believe that encouraging citizens to try to help themselves, to step up and, like, take the next right step, I don't see anything wrong with that. I believe that that's what we should be doing for each other instead of just passing a dollar bill out the window because you feel uncomfortable at a stoplight. And, like, I don't mean that in, like, the worst way ever. I mean that in, like, a positive light is, like, those signs are making you rethink your action. Like, be mindful. Like, in recovery, I'm mindful of everything I do every day. And, like, being mindful that it may, not saying it will, but it may contribute to somebody being able to go out and cop their drugs for the day. And, like, that's just a thought. You know, I know plenty of people who are experiencing homelessness that, yeah, mental illness or just veterans, so on and so forth. But encourage them to go use those resources. Take that money and go give it to these nonprofit organizations that could really help them get up and sustain actual, you know, I don't know the word to use, honestly, but, like, be able to sustain life a little bit, you know, more comfortable and be able to get up and get out and use these resources. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
So fostering deeper connections.
Yes, absolutely.
Among people in a community and also kind of raising awareness, mindfulness of what that $5 that you put out the window might do.
It's not against the law. Like he said, Chief Willard said that it's not against the law and it's not something that they're going to give tickets out for. I believe that he's coming from a really great place and that he cares about the citizens of Manchester. It's just they're trying to do what they can. They see it every day. Think about what these police officers, firefighters, and EMTs see every day, every time they show up. They don't see the success. They just see people that have overdosed and are blue in the face. Like, that's got to be rough. Do you want to jump in, Chief?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, Persephone, I appreciate your understanding of it. But I also appreciate John's understanding of it as well. One of the concerns I had is stigma. When I did this campaign, and then I saw some of the things on social media, some of the absolutely vile things people were saying about those who are panhandling. You know, these are individuals that are suffering from some social condition, whatever it may be. And not all are addicted, and I've acknowledged that repeatedly. But if you were going to go out, you had 10 bottles of water to go out and give to panhandlers on a hot day, and you knew that one bottle of water would actually kill one of those panhandlers, would you go out and dispense those 10 bottles? And it may not be in John's experience that he's dealing with people who are suffering the disease of addiction, but there's a significant enough population in Manchester that are. Again, 24 known panhandlers who have overdosed, six have died. Many of those 24 have overdosed repeatedly. And another thing that we do, to John's point about looking these folks in the eye, asking them what they need, the Manchester Police Department does outreach to all of the panhandlers in the city. So we've had contact with them. That's how we know who they are. We give them service locator cards. So any social condition that they're suffering, whether it's mental health, whether it's homelessness, whether it's hunger, we have robust services in the city to meet every single one of those needs. Can we give a homeless person who just wants to be left alone, who wants to live in the woods down by the river? And there is a population in Manchester, good people that just want to be left alone. But your social service organizations aren't going to give them cigarettes. And maybe they're going to panhandle for that. And that's one of the arguments that I actually had. Looking these folks in the eye, we had two of our downtown officers talking to a young couple, a man and a woman, who were panhandling. They gave them the service locator cards. They ended up walking them down to Labor Ready on Bridge Street. They saw the same two officers about a week later, and they were all excited because they just got an apartment, and they've been working at Labor Ready every day. So, you know, some of the outreach does work. Our goal certainly isn't to stigmatize. I certainly don't want to dip into Richard's ability to make some money so he can get the food he wants as opposed to the food he has to take at New Horizons. But the one thing these signs have done is it's created a conversation, and it's prompted people who usually feel uncomfortable at a traffic stop, traffic light, and give money to say, what else can I do? So New Horizons is seeing an uptick in donations, and they're also seeing an uptick in people calling saying, how can I help? How can I volunteer? What I would love to see is that robust outreach. A lot of these people that are now asking the questions because of these signs, physically going out to these locations and having the conversation. It can't just be law enforcement. It can't just be the police officers having conversations, looking these folks in the eye, saying, what can we do? I want to do it from a humanistic approach. I don't want to do it from a law enforcement approach. So I agree exactly with what John said. We're just trying to balance, you know, what our role is in our community with what we can really provide these individuals.
Well, so, Rob, what is the law enforcement aspect of this? I mean, is panhandling in any way, shape, or form illegal, or is it protected free speech?
It's not illegal. We do have a couple spots around some business areas that have signs that say that there's no panhandling allowed there. It's very minimal. There are certain spots that they would go to on a regular basis. But yeah, I mean, it's not considered illegal. To mirror your point too, Chief, I think that's the whole, what are the police doing about this is the common denominator, I think, amongst a lot of different communities. And to Persephone's point as well, like, you know, there's really, they can only do so much.
Well, and it's a deeper problem beyond sort of, please get that person away because I'm uncomfortable. And there's been the whole public safety debate in other cities. You know, can you be on a median? There's also been some issues in Keene. We'll talk about after a break about people in parks and so forth. So much more to talk about. And we'll start taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
I'm Virginia Prescott, here to tell you that after 8-plus years, Word of Mouth is ending its run as a weekday show. But I am thrilled to announce a revamped, retooled, and relaunched Word of Mouth weekend show beginning September 2nd. From now on, we are going local, answering your questions about the state and exploring the culture, history, and geography of the place we call home. Listen in to the new Word of Mouth, Saturdays at 11, right after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how some New Hampshire cities are managing panhandling and other behaviors that often make the public uncomfortable. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, one more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. So, John Burns, we talked a lot earlier about the approach that Chief Willard has promoted in Manchester, the signs that say don't give to people, they might take the money, they might overdose. But this other cities have been looking at this for a while. I mean, in recent years, we've done a lot of programs on this. And one of the approaches that some cities have taken, and I wonder what you think, John, is, okay, panhandling, it's protected free speech. Nothing prevents me from asking Persephone for $5. But if I get aggressive, if I start to shout at her, or if I ask her for money while I'm on one of those median strips in a shopping plaza, right, John, then it starts to run into public safety issues.
Yeah, it certainly can. And I'm certainly not a fan of that approach either. And there's going to be, like any other segment of our population, there's going to be people who are aggressive and inappropriate. I think they make up a minority, but I do think it can become problematic and a safety issue. But I also think a lot of the ordinances tend to use a minority of anecdotal stories to paint a broad brush again, and it labels everyone. And we had an ordinance passed in my hometown of Somersworth, where they passed fines for people handing money out at medians.
Yeah, they did that in Concord too, and a couple other cities.
Right, and I think educating people on how to handle it and educating people on how to have conversations with individuals who are struggling is a much better approach. Because ironically, in Somersworth, there was controversy not more than a month after they passed the ordinance, because the police department put police officers dressed as homeless panhandlers on the same medians to do a sting operation on people texting. Again, not a big fan of texting and driving, but to say it's a public safety issue and then do that, and it was stopped pretty swiftly, and this was a while ago. But those are the kind of nuances that I think are sometimes have a lot of hypocrisy written behind them, and there's more a flavor of we just want this out of sight, and we use anecdotal situations to justify that when it's unfair and it stereotypes people who are, again, they need empathy, they need some connection, they need some people to treat them with dignity, and the opposite is the effect of it. And then it goes viral on social media and people get labeled and people get stigmatized and pushed farther into the shadows, which is not going to help them. And if anything, it puts them in greater danger.
I love what you just said about getting pushed into the shadows and greater danger. And Persephone, given your personal experience, I just want your thoughts on that sort of, you know, when you're struggling with addiction, but you don't want to come out and say because you'll get criticized in the community. And I just wonder what you think about that comment that John made about people who are struggling with homelessness or addiction or mental illness kind of going into the shadows.
Well, I'd have to say that I know exactly what it feels like to be completely disconnected from, like, everybody around me, and to be kind of just pushed into the shadows, I guess you'd say. But I feel like if, again, hate breeds hate, so I feel like if we feed that out there as if this is what we're doing to people, I feel that's just going to feed it. We encourage people who are experiencing substance use disorder to go to rehab, to go to detox, to go to programs, to go to sober houses. I feel like encouraging people who are experiencing homelessness to go to these resources, the soup kitchen, to, you know, ask the state for help, whatever it may be. I don't see that stigmatizing them or pushing them in the wrong direction. I feel as if, yes, we're trying to help them get off the street, but we mean it in the best way. You know what I'm saying?
Do you want to jump in, Rob?
Yeah. To your point, both you guys' points, actually, about being feeling pushed in the shadows and everything like that, there's a lot of people out there that are experiencing homelessness or in a homeless crisis that feel maybe they don't qualify for services, maybe there's no services out there that can help them in their present situation. In the Keene area, I'm part of the Greater Keene Homeless Coalition. And one thing that we've done in the last couple months, we've organized a group of service providers, MADAC, CHARI, housing authorities like Keene Housing, Cheshire Housing Trust, other human services and social services groups, and we assemble at the community kitchen one day a month at night when they're coming in to get dinner. We've done it 2 months in a row. I've been super busy. I know a lot of other people at the tables have too. But the premise about outreach far and wide is that you meet people where they're at. Again, being pushed in the shadows, you feel like there's nobody out there that cares, nobody out there that they can talk to. You know, in my almost 2 years of doing this, anytime I encounter somebody on a site, I think 99% of the time, someone's willing to come out and talk to me about whatever it is that's going on in their lives. And that allows me, at least where they're at, to help try to expedite and refer some resources to them as well.
So in Keene, Robert, and I was reading about this yesterday in the Keene Sentinel, there's been a fair bit of coverage, so I want to give them credit. There's been concern about public spaces, drug use in those spaces, people passed out from alcohol, aggressive panhandling, and a real debate in Keene over, you know, what over outreach and the right way to help people, but also what rights other people have in public spaces to be safe, to bring their kids to the park, to feel like they can, you know, have a nice dinner outside downtown. So I just wonder how you guys are going to work through that balance. You know, the chief keeps saying, you know, he doesn't want to lock people up just for being homeless. On the other hand, you know, people have a right to enjoy their public spaces without, you know, worrying about running into somebody who's overdosed.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, the substance use epidemic statewide it seems like it progressively gets worse as time goes on. Even though we have a lot of great organizations that are coming up to try to help, you know, I still think some people feel maybe like they're disconnected from services. Again, in my area, a lot of the people that are experiencing homelessness are in recovery. So very seldom do I encounter somebody that's active using aside from alcohol abuse on those rare occasions in my path. Most of the people that are suffering from, you know, drugs and severe substance misuse, heroin, stuff like that, they're housed. So, but as far as the parks go, right, public spaces, my stance on that would be if you see something going on that's not okay, call the authorities, get them over there. But also, too, you know, our authorities, police, fire, EMS, they're all great at, you know, talking with those individuals, helping them get resources, making the referrals to the appropriate places. I hope I answered that all right.
I think so.
Okay.
And we got lots of listeners, so we'll talk a lot more about that. The number for you to join us again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Peter's in Rochester. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Can
morning.
You hear me all right?
We sure can, Peter. Go ahead.
So I see panhandlers most of the time when I'm driving. And it's usually at an intersection a lot of times. So just a little thing that I started doing. You know, I don't want to give them money because of, you know, I think sometimes it will lead to drug use. So I carry food in my car that I can quickly roll down the window and hand them, something like a box of raisins. I'm trying to think of other kinds of food. I'm limited to raisins at the moment. But, you know, granola bars, basically just a suggestion that people just carry some snacks or food in the car that they can hand to these people.
So, Peter, is it against the law in Rochester to hand something to somebody out of a moving vehicle on a median strip? Because I know in some cities that transaction is not legal.
I'd never occurred to me, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't think you'll get in trouble for handing out a box of raisins. What about in Manchester, well, Chief Willard? Because in Concord, I know they've been struggling with this, and in a couple of the cities as well.
Yeah, the city of Manchester passed the city ordinance when I was an assistant chief of police. We didn't necessarily enforce it. I think Chief Mara and I both felt on its face, it was unconstitutional to do so. So even though it is on the books in Manchester, I refuse to enforce it because I don't think it's constitutional. What I will say, if you stop at a green light, though, we will take enforcement action on that.
So that's a safety concern.
Yeah, even in the generosity of heart that Peter shows, and I think it's wonderful that you want to give him food. I think it's phenomenal, or water. But if the light is green and you stop dead, there's a potential that you could cause a rear-end collision or some sort of accident. I mean, we've seen it in Manchester. I actually got a call from the police chief in Nashua who was coming to Manchester. He got off at South Willow Street, and a woman stopped dead in front of him at a green light to give money to a panhandler. Now, that's very dangerous. So we will take enforcement action up from the motor vehicle code, which are motor vehicle laws, for impeding the traffic or something like that. But if somebody stopped, the light's red, and they hand out a box of raisins, the Manchester Police Department would not take action.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Peter. And let's take another call. This is Molly in Durham. Hi, Molly. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have 2 points. One simple is, having been out in San Francisco and had a daughter get sick there, families are one of the major homeless and living in cars, kids not getting to school, poor nutrition. Solving that issue would help so many people, and they're stuck with panhandling. The other issue, not more importantly, is a public health illness issue. Conclaves of homeless, not by choice, often carry some communicable diseases. People working with that are subject to getting sick. My feeling is, and certain drugs like TB drugs can't be stopped without causing more serious illness. So I consider this that type of a public health issue where are these towns making sure that when they work with the homeless, are they making sure that they are getting their medicines? Are they taking away their pills to make sure they're not drug pills? How are they dealing this? I found out in San Francisco that moving homeless, they took their drugs. Sometimes it took more than 2 weeks to get back on their medicines for health, and that caused an even bigger.
So, Molly, how do you think New Hampshire communities should deal with this problem? And I hear you raising a lot of concerns. How do you think communities should approach it? What about your own community, Durham?
Our homeless issue is minimal, so we're not having the same issues as the city. When they are noticed, our police help take them in and try and get them to the appropriate places. So in our town, it's not an issue, but in bigger towns and health issues, communicable diseases are very important because the illnesses are quite severe, especially
okay.
TB.
Molly, thank you so much for the call. And let's take another one. This is Sheila in Brookfield. Hi, Sheila. Go ahead. You're on the air. Sheila, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Yep.
Yeah. My name is actually Celia.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Celia. I apologize.
Okay. That's okay. My daughter and I twice witnessed something at one of these median strips with panhandlers. A car pulled up on the side. Two people got out, replaced the ones that were panhandling on the median strip, and those two got back in the car. Now, we were confused by this at first. But I'm wondering, is there an incident of somebody making money off of panhandling in this way? That they literally were changing shift. So I'll take my, discussion off the air.
Okay. And Sheila, thank you for the call. And Chief Willett, I've heard people raise stories like this before.
Yeah, Sheila, thanks for the call. Again, it goes to John's point about stigmatizing every person who panhandles. People do it for a variety of reasons, right? Homelessness, it may be mental illness, it may be an addiction, but there are those who do it to make money. We have one particular gentleman in Manchester that we know has a walker and he doesn't need it. He throws it in the back of his trunk and drives off. But so there are different demographics of people who panhandle. But that notion that they're all out there making a living on it is that's really a false premise. There are only a really rare number. Remember, these are folks that on some level need help. So I don't want to paint them as they're out there, making a grand living on it. There was one particular gentleman who panhandled in Manchester on the same city street, had been there for about a year, And again, he had the same customers every day. So people, and that's what he called them, his customers, that they would come by and they give him $5. Well, he ultimately bought a pickup truck, and now he does scrap metal in the city of Manchester, and he's no longer on the street. So he's kind of a success story. Through panhandling, he was able to create a life. But certainly that notion that people are doing it because it's so lucrative. I will say, when you see individuals, different individuals at the same intersection, pretty much all of the time, it's because people are giving them money. And those are the people I'm asking to at least try my social experiment. Let's try to no longer give them money. Let's push them to the social services. If you feel that your generosity of heart is so strong that you need to give, then go to the soup kitchen and volunteer. Then get a group of your friends together and actually go and speak with the panhandlers in real time. You know, try to truly make a difference. In Manchester, the reason we have a significant problem isn't just our drug crisis. It's because we're a very generous city and we have robust social services that draw a lot of people from the state to our community.
John, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Just echoing the chief's comments is that you don't want to paint that, because for all we know, those four individuals where two were switching off in the car. It's not unusual for people who are panhandling to be homeless, and you see a lot of individuals homeless living in tent areas where there's 6 or 10 of them. They might be living in that car. There might be 4 people that live in that car, and yeah, they are switching shifts, and 2 are going back to sit in the car wherever they're parked, and the other 2 are panhandling and they're switching off. I mean, people who are on the streets and homeless or not homeless and panhandling tend to be resourceful. Again, they might be complete con artists, because you do have that element out there too. But to just look at it from afar and say this is what it is kind of the easy way out. As the person who is giving out raisins, I always, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, that's great, but if you could like put aside 10 or 15 minutes, if you see those people every day, maybe pull off to a parking lot and go out and talk to them and spend a few minutes and give them the raisins at the same time, but talk to them and get to know people.
It's easier to give somebody $1 or $5 than it is to take the time to call the social service agency. You know, the signs have Chief Willard have the phone numbers, but you know, it's on our end, the giving end, it's just a lot easier to, you know, hand the money out than it is to really engage with someone. I think that's what Persephone was talking about.
Right. And I think in my experience with outreach, and having been homeless myself and having done and panhandled myself years ago, you know, it's, when you're out panhandling, you hear a lot of really negative, stigmatizing comments every 5 minutes. People judge you. People pick up their kids, and the kids that were walking beside them are suddenly in their arms, and their faces are being turned, and it can be very dehumanizing. So whatever, I think empathy and compassion is really a bigger key than anything, along with funding some of our social programs at a state and community level, so that we can provide more robust services. We're still a state that has one of the most underfunded infrastructures when it comes to homelessness and mental health and substance misuse. You know, those issues, we're talking about a symptom of a much bigger problem. And a big part of that problem is we don't have the infrastructure we should to treat the real problem.
How is the infrastructure, Persephone, these days? We've talked so much about this on this program. How robust do you see the whole recovery and treatment network now as compared to a couple of years ago?
Well, if I hear your question right, I'm lucky. I'm 22 months sober, and that for me is, I couldn't even get like 22 minutes sober for 5 long years, you know. I've been actually really blessed with it, being able to watch the recovery communities grow. Other people in recovery support each other, and I see an upward, you know.
You can hear the break music coming, yeah. And there's no pressure. That's a common reaction. I'm going to let you finish up after a short break. And we'll take a lot more calls because people really want to engage on this conversation. And that's great. The number 1-800-892, join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is great, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how cities are managing panhandling in New Hampshire And in connection with that, the problems of drug abuse and mental illness. We've been looking at different approaches that different cities have taken with mixed levels of success, as we're hearing. The number for you to join us with your comments and thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Persephone Lesperance, just before the break, you were answering my question about just, you know, everybody here has been saying we need a more robust network of treatment and recovery services. So maybe that would reduce some of the problems that we see in our public spaces. And I asked you how robust you see the system today versus a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, I've had the pleasure of watching the recovery community in Stratford County, because that's kind of where I'm from. I've watched it just flourish. I've watched recovery centers that work together with the police departments and the fire departments, and I've been able to be a part of that. I've gone in with the police, Dover Police Department, into the schools, middle schools, high schools, awareness, education. I see that it's going to take a lot of work. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and like, it takes one moment for me. Like, relapse was a huge part of my story, and I could build myself up and have a little bit of time and I'd relapse and everything would just be lost in a day. And it's so much harder to build that back. And I believe that I've really seen some great things. I would be amazing to see a lot of, you know, the counties in the state mirror kind of some things that we've tried out in Stratford County. But every place is going to, you know, do their own thing. But it has been really great to see. And in working in treatment now, I am so lucky to be able to work in a facility and see people, like the clients actually like sustain some sort of recovery, want to help each other. The encouragement, when I was getting sober, that was not the thing.
How long ago was that? Because that gives us a perspective again on how robust this system
right,
is today.
So when I was getting sober, that was 22 months ago, you know, when it first started for me. But 3 years prior to that, I was in and out of jail, Valley Street, Framingham, Stratford County. I, shame, guilt, every stigma you would ever imagine facing, I faced it very much in the public eye, and it was hard. It was really hard to fight back. Today, it is, I believe that it, I tell everybody this is the best time to be in recovery. Like, to be able to stand up and stand out and be like, yes, I'm a recovering heroin addict and I'm grateful and I'm going to help the next person. And we encourage that at the recovery centers all the time. Recovery coaches are peer support, and it's been the most amazing thing to watch, and it grows more and more and more, and to watch each recovery center open up, be a part of that, and so on and so forth has just been amazing. I believe that over time we're going to see a really great turnout from that.
Hopefully, because so far, from what I understand, the numbers are still maybe a slight decline in overdose deaths, but still up there. So, but I really appreciate the messages of hope for sure. You look like you want to jump in, Rob.
Oh, well, I just wanted to hear what Persephone's saying. You know, 3-4 years ago, you couldn't talk about recovery, right? I mean, there was such a stigma just put on being in recovery. And, you know, I know a lot of great people that have been in recovery for a very, very long time that – even, you know, 3, 4, 5 years sober, they're still struggling to find work because of what they did when they were 19, 20 years old. It's very frustrating. But again, I'm a big proprietor of the more education around something that we have, the better understanding we have, and the more opportunities we can afford. I mean, you know, these people that are in recovery have been working to better themselves. And I think that they deserve just as much of a shot as anybody else does that has never had to suffer the throes of addiction.
Well, and that gets us to part of our conversation today. You know, people say, why are people even panhandling when there's so many jobs in New Hampshire? Every business you drive by, you know, says help wanted. So that's part of the reason, you're saying. If you're in recovery, it can be hard to find work?
Well, there's that, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, a lot of people, not all, but some have had some sort of criminal history, right? They've been to jail, maybe they have felonies on their record, and, you know, and that can deter employers from doing that. But other people that panhandle are people that may be on a fixed income, disability, you know, only getting around $700 a month. There's no affordable housing out there that can really support that. And the ones that do have pretty lengthy wait lists, and, you know, they need to afford their medication. They need to afford food to live. So, I mean, maybe services may be limited, or maybe they just aren't sure about them. And so that's why they're doing it, to try to generate some revenue to help cover some of those expenses. That's where I encourage a strong outreach approach to that to help them understand what they can get.
This is the whole debate we've been talking about. You know, do you give money? Do you give food? Do you give outreach? What do you do? Go ahead, Persephone.
Just to kind of go off of what he was talking about, where we bring in jobs, I'm actually working on with a job fair with Safe Harbor and Granite Pathways is that we're trying to get recovery-friendly or felon-friendly employers to get together. And a friend of mine that works over at Safe Harbor, she's amazing, and this was her this amazing idea, and just trying to work together to get, you know, if there are a few different places, call centers and I can't actually, like, right off the top of my head, but there's this one call center in Portsmouth that's really great. I know that a lot of recovery centers or, how would I put it, like rehabs or 12-step-based places that are, they like people in recovery. Like, that's what we do. You know what this person is going through. You're going to be the best relatable person to work with them, so on and so forth. So we're like, that's what we're trying to do, a little bit of a movement right now of trying to encourage people that are willing to take a chance on people that are in recovery, that will employ felons and so on and so forth. So, I mean, there's going to be a movement there too, you know, one day at a time.
Yeah, and that may reduce some of the panhandling that we're seeing. Let's go back to our listeners and hear their ideas again for panhandling, other public behaviors that make some people uncomfortable, how New Hampshire cities are dealing with this. And to Manchester, where Andrew's on the line. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Such an important issue. I'd like to commend Chief Willard. Certainly, I think the signs have been great. I feel like I'm a fairly compassionate individual and have occasionally given money in the past to panhandlers when they've really tugged at my heartstrings. But the signs have caused me to stop and think about what services exist in the city. And when I dug into it, I realized that there's a lot more the city offered these individuals than I previously realized. And I think the important thing about those signs, while they may be controversial to some, they do stop and make people pause and think about how else can we help these people.
So what have you done, Andrew? Have you changed your behavior from, you know, just giving folks a couple bucks to doing something more deeper, more meaningful?
Yes, my wife and I have changed all of our donations. You know, we wouldn't set aside money to give to panhandlers, but now we donate maybe $20 a month or so to social services within the city instead, because we feel like our dollars can go further by giving to an organization rather than to an individual.
Okay. Andrew, thank you for the call. Chief Willard, there you go.
Yeah, I know, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And I've been hearing it anecdotally from the social service organizations that they have seen an uptick in donations. They've seen an uptick in volunteerism. So if there's any positive that has come out of this, because I am actually struggling with it. I struggled with this. We come up with the language, you come up with the look of the signs, and I'm with John. I'm a very compassionate person. I grew up from nothing, so I'm not far from where a lot of those folks were. So I was concerned about the stigma. I was concerned about what it says. So the one thing that I'm really happy about is I have seen and heard of an uptick in donations to services in the city, as well as more people seem to be volunteering. And now we're having the discussion, and I think that's a very important thing to do.
I want to ask John and Persephone about the Keene debate that we talked about earlier with Rob. Again, Keene has been really looking at panhandling, what some people feel is aggressive panhandling, also just concerns about public spaces becoming a refuge for people overdosing on drugs, passed out for alcohol. This whole debate in Keene was sparked by a mom who posted on Facebook a photo of a man slumped over on a bench. He looks like he's overdosed, but there's some debate on Facebook over whether he actually had a needle sticking out of his arm or whether he was passed out from alcohol. But the point is, I'm not going to get into that. The point is, he's in a public park where kids play, and this mom said, quote, "I can't even take my son to the park without seeing people do drugs, have people beg me for money, make me feel super unsafe and uncomfortable." And John, I just wonder, we talked with Rob about this, but I just wonder, there's a variety of needs and desires for what a community should look like and should feel like. And what do you think about what that mom said? It sparked a huge conversation in Keene.
I mean, I think it's a challenge, and I don't think there's an easy answer to it. I mean, you should be able to bring your kids safely to a park, and you shouldn't have to shut down parks because of this. But I think it points to a bigger problem, and this is a symptom of the problem. So that, you know, as communities, we need to mobilize to fix the problem and not just fix the symptoms, and or not try to push people farther away from the parks, but instead let's come up with some solutions for them. You know, we see this, the peer recovery support model that we have at SOS. We're now doing outreach in Rochester where we're sending groups of 8 and 10 out into the woods, finding individuals who are homeless and reaching out to them. And we're talking to the police departments about where are the problem areas. And, you know, having conversations with the chief in Rochester saying, what can we do so that we're not pushing them out? You know, because I had concerns with patrolmen coming out and saying, you can't stay here. And so instead, we're going out in conversations like, keep your campsites clean and let's have conversations and bring in some bottled water and some food and some resource cards, more importantly, but most of that dignity piece. So I think back to the Keen thing, I think you just need to, as communities, we need to come together and find real solutions to the problem and stop trying to move the symptoms around, because you might clear out one park. They're going to go, those individuals still haven't had their needs met. So they're going to go somewhere else, and you're just moving the problem around if you don't treat the problem.
It's tough, though, isn't it? Because it's short-term, long-term. I mean, long-term, I understand what you're trying to say. But short-term, I want to walk downtown. You know, I want to have a nice lunch. You know, I mean, it's my community, too. So I just wonder what you think about that.
But I think with outreach efforts and peer, you can have some pretty quick, short-term results if you start providing some compassion and empathy and mobilize a community to get involved. I mean, a very small minority of the community gets engaged in these issues. If the difference between 10 people doing outreach and 50 and having community sessions where you train people on what the resources are and can provide those resources, when you go fivefold with peer outreach support models, that can have a pretty tremendous short-term impact. It doesn't solve the basic needs and some of the social determinants that are leading to these, but it certainly gets people interested and continuing to, you know, speak to our policymakers who provide the funding for the bigger problem and making sure that it's funded and getting businesses engaged to, you know, as Persephone said, getting businesses engaged to, like, look past maybe that felony theft conviction 3 years ago because it was related to their addiction and hire that individual. Because it's a lot easier for somebody to sustain their recovery if they have a livable wage. And, you know, one of the biggest things we run into at the recovery centers are people can't find jobs because they've had felonies. People don't have safe housing. There's not enough recovery housing. There's not enough and there's not enough transportation. When you don't have housing, transportation, or a job, recovery is really, really difficult. So,
and you maybe resort to panhandling, which is what we've been talking about. So, yeah. I wonder what you think, too, Persephone. Again, you're more of an expert on recovery and substance abuse than the panhandling issue. But some cities have said, you know, look, we've got people overdosing in our parks. We've got people, you know, falling asleep from drinking too much on a public bench. I mean, this sort of degrades the image, the feeling of our community. And I just wonder what you think about that.
You know, that's really hard for me to, like, come across an answer, because I come from a very, like, compassionate side of things. And I also feel really strongly about educating our youth. So instead of I think it opens up a conversation with that child. They need to be educated. And it's with young ones, I'm like, they're, you know, I was sick, right? Like, when I spoke to my little brother and had to make amends to that poor little boy because I wasn't there for him for many years. Your sister was very sick, you know, just in the right way and bringing awareness, right? So, like, if it comes to a point, like, that's where, like, this compassion fatigue training comes in with all the, you know, EMTs and officers and firefighters, is that, like, what if we start turning our backs because we're sick of it, right? And then that's somebody else who's left out in the dark and may just die there alone, face down on a bench. And that's hard for me because I overdosed in Manchester, actually. And if it wasn't for those EMTs and those police officers that came into that house, I wouldn't be sitting with you today. You know, so I'm a huge advocate for, it may take a couple of times. It may never catch. But, like, who are we to say that it won't? So it's really hard for me to say what it is for, like, like for that community, we only have so much control. We don't control anybody outside of ourselves. So I'm a firm believer in like what you give is what you get. The way that I carry and conduct myself every day, I hope that others see me as a power example and just do the same. It's a hard one.
Yeah, it is a hard one.
Yeah, and if I could jump in.
Go ahead,
Persephone is a remarkable young lady, remarkable. And she is who we should be looking at when we – this compassion fatigue is real. She's absolutely right because I hear it a lot. I'm at a lot of events and people say, come on, Chief, should we still be giving these folks Narcan? Well, let's look at Persephone, and you're damn right we should, because she is exactly why we want to bring everybody back every single time. We don't turn our backs on them, and we don't lose compassion. And the one thing I love about those people who are in recovery, I would say 90% of them always give back. They want to give back. Either it's a peer-to-peer, either they become counselors, or they speak out. So Persephone is exactly why we continue to fight the battle that we do, and we can't give in to compassion fatigue.
One more quick question about this panhandling that we started talking about, and we just have a very short time left. So I'm going to turn to you, Rob. This has caught on in a couple other cities around the country, including a few in New England, that there are these meters. They're called charity meters or giving meters. And instead of giving the dollar to the homeless person or taking the extra step to put the dollar in an envelope or bring it to the homeless shelter or whatever, it's like a parking meter, and you stick the money in these giving meters, and then when it fills up, they give it to that reputable social service agency. Now, this is catching on in other communities around the country. I just wonder if you've heard of it, what you think of it, or what?
No, that's the first I've heard of that. I think that's a pretty neat idea. You know, allows you to, like you said, it speeds up the whole donation process to something that you truly believe in. You know, and at the end of the day, we're all people, right? And we're all helping. We all really want to help other people. It's people helping people. And you got to do it the most comfortable way you can find possible.
Well, a lot more we could have talked about, but I want to thank everybody for being here. Robert Waters, it was really good to meet you. Thank you. That's Rob Waters, Outreach Walker with Southwestern Community Services. John Burns, good to have you too. Thank you so much. John Burns, Director of SOS Recovery Community Organization in Stratford County, the founder of Families Hoping and Coping. Persephone Lesperance, very nice to meet you too.
Thank you. Nice to meet you too.
Persephone Lesperance, recovery coach with SOS and recovery support worker at Keystone Hall. And Chief Willard, thank you for taking time out. We know you're a busy guy.
Thank you for having me.
That's Nick Willard, police chief for the city of Manchester. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.